It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Pittsburgh City Council was expected to give final approval today to an ordinance that increases the transparency of city elections. It's one of a package of bills proposed by Councilman Dan Gilman. He says will improve ethics in city government and municipal elections. But his campaign finance bill does have its critics. I'm joined now by Pittsburgh District 8 City Councilman Dan Gilman. Councilman Gilman, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. It's always good to be with you.
So do you have some news for us from City Council chambers?
We do. We just left chambers, and all three of my bills passed today with 8 votes in support. The transparency bill got 9 votes. The ethics and campaign finance reform both got 8 votes in support of those bills. And I think we have a new era of transparency in government here in Pittsburgh.
How would you say that this package of bills improves ethics and transparency in city government and municipal elections, which is your goal?
Sure. Well, to start, it creates an ethics board that can be seated, which hasn't been true in Pittsburgh for somewhere in between 5 to 7 years since we've actually had a sitting ethics board. And that actually creates paid government positions to staff that ethics board with investigators and an executive director. So you as a resident have a place to go to properly file complaints about an elected official or a government official abusing their position. And as an elected official, I have a place to go for ethical guidance before inaction or a gift is accepted.
All right, before before we move on to other pieces of legislation here, let's look at this at the ethics code and let's explain a little more to our listeners what you're talking about. This bill overhauls the city's ethics code, which is, as you said, supposed to investigate accusations of misconduct. And according to Councilwoman Natalia Rudiak, the board apparently has not met since 2008 and has no current members. However, Councilwoman Darlene Harris says she doesn't believe the board is actually defunct, as you and Mrs. Rudiak have claimed. Which is it?
I mean, Mrs. Harris is entitled to her own opinion, but she's not entitled to her own facts. Reality is there are no members of the ethics board. All of their terms have expired. That just is a fact. And there hasn't been a meeting in years. I can't say with certainty if Ms. Rudiak's 2008 is right or if it's 2009 or 2010, but we all know it's years since the Ethics Board has held a meeting.
And the proposal would also add legal protection for whistleblowers, which doesn't currently exist in city code. Why is this necessary?
You know, there was some argument that federal law generally protects city employees already, but this adds greater comfort to a city employee that, look, if you see waste, fraud, or abuse in your department, come forward. You have someone to go to where you can complain about your supervisor or your department director or the mayor or a council member without any fear of retribution in terms of your job, punishment, your salary, et cetera.
Now let's look at the overhaul of the city's 2009 campaign finance law. It has some very vocal critics, including city controller Michael Lamb, who says it's very self-serving to incumbent office holders. It should be pointed out that Mr. Lamb may well be considering another run for mayor in 2017, but his criticism is based on a provision that says, quote, no donations received prior to November 4th shall count towards the new contribution limits, end quote. What about his point that this helps incumbents like yourself?
Well, the arguments that have come from Michael Lamb, Chelsea Wagner, and Darlene Harris just don't hold water. By its very nature, campaign finance reform hurts incumbents. The problem in this country and in this city, and I'll put myself as one of the people who could abuse it, is incumbents are in a position where they can raise absurd amounts of money from people who do business with the city. It makes it very hard for challengers to run, which is why Congress has something like a 93% reelection rate. That's bad for government. I want a challenger. I want people to push me to do a better job. I want people to feel to have the right to participate in the democratic process. And by putting campaign finance limits in, it caps what I can raise as an incumbent. So to make an argument that Mrs. Harris and Mr. Lamb and Ms. Wagner have made, somehow campaign finance limits hurts challengers, just doesn't hold water. And to Mr. Lamb's particular comment, I can't pass a law that retroactively would go in and make donations that had been received by people now illegal. There are donations that were accepted by elected officials perfectly legally under the current system, in no way in abuse of it, that would not be legal after November 3rd. I'm not going to pass a law that goes back and makes them, you know, somehow scoff laws. So you've got to have a starting point. Every point in history, whether it's 20 years ago today or 30 years from now, there are going to be incumbents when a new law passes. And there's history there. I can't eliminate history. I don't have the DeLorean. I can't change past and future.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, my guest, Pittsburgh District 8 City Councilman Dan Gilman. You can join the conversation if you have a comment or a question for the councilman. 412-246-2002, the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002 with your comments and questions. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essspgh. And again, if you're just tuning in, Pittsburgh City Council has given final approval today to an ordinance that increases the transparency of city elections. It's a package of bills proposed by Councilman Dan Gilman, and he says that these will improve ethics in city government and municipal elections. These have had their critics. However, the legislation has passed overwhelmingly in City Council today. And the third bill of yours, Councilman Gilman, continues the theme of holding government accountable and would require the city to put various information and records online. Explain how this will contribute to more transparency.
Yeah, our city website, it's just not good, to be honest. And that's not a knock on the workers. They haven't been given the tools to succeed. But it's not user-friendly. And to go online and find contact information for all city employees, next to impossible. To find out how do I bid on a contract or what contracts are up, how do I register as a lobbyist or any number of other issues, is difficult. So my bill calls for a one-stop shop, a transparency portal, if you will, where you can go in and get information that the public wants to know. And then maybe most importantly in there is it calls for a feasibility study on taking a lot of meetings that happen during the day and move them to nighttime. So things like planning commission, zoning board, where you really may be impacted as a resident. And right now you have to take off from work. You have to pay, exorbitant parking fees in parts of downtown, all to come to have your voices heard. I think we should really look at moving some of those meetings to the nighttime so that residents can feel more ability to participate in person.
Is there something about the age in which we live that has been more conducive to proposing and ultimately passing legislation like yours?
Yeah, absolutely. I get probably more feedback via Twitter and Facebook than I do phone calls to the office. And I think more and more people are watching our meetings, certainly on TV and even online. And that's people of all ages, all demographics, who want to see what government's doing. And now you can do it from the comfort of your living room just by having a computer or a TV in front of you. So I think the personal feedback we're receiving from people who are watching carefully makes council members more aware of how much information people want to have at their fingertips.
What is the next thing that you feel needs to be addressed?
Well, the next bill I'm doing was 180 from the direction I've been taking on, and that's food trucks. That's actually I'm hoping to introduce this coming week. We need to, again, update laws that were written in the 1970s to make it a city that's more supportive of innovation and entrepreneurship. And in this case, the food truck laws were written when there was nothing but an ice cream truck at your Little League game. So, for instance, you have to move every 30 minutes under city law. Well, that's impossible as a food truck. Your grill's just getting hot at 30 minutes. So I'm going to look to update those to try to be supportive of the industry that's really been burgeoning here and a good part of our community.
Well, I've heard people say that if in an ideal world, they would have food trucks outside of their house and never have to cook, just walk outside and kind of pick which food truck to go to at which time of the day and enjoy a delicious meal.
It's a great part of the culinary community. There is some pushback that I understand about restaurants that are paying property taxes and a whole slew of other fees in the competition there. I think it adds to it. I can say I've never gone out with my wife planning to have a nice dinner out, seen a food truck and changed my plans. I still want to have fancy restaurants. I still want to have a casual restaurant. I still want to have a deli in my neighborhood. But there are certain times you're walking down the street and you get a whiff of something coming from a food truck and you just got to try it. It brings people to the street. It adds pedestrian flow in business districts. I think it's good for our communities.
So you don't see it as competition. You just see it as one more choice that people might have on a night when they don't necessarily feel they need to sit down at a linen cloth with silverware and fancy plates and have the ambiance. They may just want to stay out and stroll and eat a Euro or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, look, you have to be respectful. You should not pull your food truck up and put it, you know, parked outside with the engine running right in front of somebody's, you know, sidewalk cafe. I think there's some decency there, and we're trying to address that in the bill. But as you look at an entire neighborhood or an entire business district, it brings people to the street. It brings vibrancy. It brings street life, which is good for public safety. It's good for retail numbers. And there really is, quite frankly, no evidence contrary to that when you look at cities across the country and even across the world where you're seeing an increase in food trucks equaling a diminishing number of restaurants in a neighborhood.
We've been talking with Pittsburgh City Councilman Dan Gilman today. He saw a package of bills that he proposed addressing ethics in city government and municipal elections pass overwhelmingly in the city council. Councilman Gilman, thanks for taking the time to join us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate the time. It's a good day for Pittsburgh, and I'm glad to share it with your listeners.
Thank you again.
All right, take care.
Coming up, unlocking the mysteries of our sense of smell. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.